And we thought we'd consider something about the actions and attributes of angels, good and bad. First, we just study about things they're capable of doing and not doing, as indicated in the Bible. Now, first thing we'll do, we'll read it being Kings, where the Lord opened the eyes of Gehazi. 2 Kings 6:17. Bruce, if you'd read that, the 17th verse.
And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes, that he may see." And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots, flying round about Elisha.
All right, now, the reason that we quote this is this, that angels can be present and invisible. Present, but invisible. And that it takes a miracle to be able to see them, because we're human beings. We can't see spirit beings unless God gives us the ability to see, or he makes them visible to us. Two ways it can be done. Now, in this case, Elisha could see. He could see. In fact, he says in the account here that they that be for us are more than they that be against us. And there was a physical army. There was an army that they were confronted with, the prophet and his servant. But the servant couldn't see anybody. He only saw two people, Elisha, his master, and his servant. Two people. So while Elisha could see it, he prayed so that this young man, who's a servant of Elisha, could also see these invisible angels. And it's interesting to notice that the angels used vehicles like man uses. Now, of course, back in those days, say a couple thousand years ago, there were no airplanes. There were no automobiles. So what did they do back there? They rode on camels, donkeys, and they walked on foot. Or they sailed in a boat. They sailed, but they didn't have motorboats. And so what happens? The angels, in order to convey to man that they have vehicles of travel, when they reveal themselves to mankind, they use something comparable to what exists in the day in which they appear. That's why you see flying saucers today. You don't see chariots of fire like in Elijah's day. You see a vehicle that is comparable to the most advanced technology that exists now. And what is it? We have jets. We have jet flyers. We have... Now, these are fallen angels that do this. But we're just showing that back there, when they did things like this, the angels, they used things comparable to the development of mankind and of science, as it was known at that time. So it's miraculous to see them. Now the next thing, some things that they can do. We have a reason for going into these details that we will bring together later on. Let us read another account about Manoah. Judges 13, the second verse through 21. Gail, if you read that account.
And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren, and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman, and said unto her, Behold now, thou art barren, and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive, and bear a son. Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine, nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive, and bear a son. And no razor shall come on his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the woman came and told her husband, saying, A man of God came unto me, and his countenance was like the countenance of an angel of God, very terrible. But I asked him not whence he was, neither told he me his name. But he said unto me, Behold, thou shalt conceive and bear a son. And now drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death. Then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, O my Lord, let the man of God which thou didst send come again unto us, and teach us what we shall do unto the child that shall be born. And God hearkened to the voice of Manoah, and the angel of God came again unto the woman as she sat in the field. But Manoah her husband was not with her. And the woman made haste and ran and showed her husband, and said to him, Behold, the man hath appeared unto me that came unto me the other day. And Manoah arose and went after his wife, and came to the man, and said unto him, Art thou the man that spake it unto the woman? And he said, I am. Then Manoah said, Now let thy words come to pass. How shall we order the child, and how shall we do unto him? And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, Of all that I said unto the woman, let her beware. She may not eat of anything that cometh of the vine, neither let her drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. All that I commanded her, let her observe. And Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, I pray thee, let us detain thee, until we shall have made ready a kid for thee. And the angel of the Lord said unto Manoah, Though thou detain me, I will not eat of thy bread. And if thou wilt offer a burnt offering, thou must offer it unto the Lord. For Manoah knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said unto the angel of the Lord, What is thy name? That when thy sayings come to pass, we may do thee honor. And the angel of the Lord said unto him, Why askest thou thus after my name, seeing it is secret? So Manoah took a kid with a meat offering, and offered it upon a rock unto the Lord. And the angel did wondrously, and Manoah and his wife looked on. For it came to pass, when the flame went up toward heaven from off the altar, that the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame of the altar. And Manoah and his wife looked on it, and fell on their faces to the ground. But the angel of the Lord did no more appear to Manoah and to his wife. Then Manoah knew that he was an angel of the Lord.
All right. Now, see, just to review it briefly, here's a woman that's out in the field, and this man appears to her, but the account tells us this actually was an angel who looked like an ordinary man, but a little different in that there was something about him mysterious. And the man says to her, you're going to have a child. Well, by the way, she would like one very much, and is hoping that that's the case. But when she sees the definiteness with which this man speaks and all, she feels that this is like someone sent of the Lord, some messenger sent, like a prophet or something like that. So she tells her husband about this, the experience she had, and saw this man of God. Now, she didn't know it was an angel either. See, it says that later on that Manoah didn't know, the husband didn't know that it was an angel of God, but they did feel, both of them did feel, that it was a man of God. First, she said, a man of God appeared to me when she talked to her husband. The husband, after he saw the man, he felt also that there was something about the person that was a little different, and he respected him and so forth. Now, what happens in deference of hospitality for this strange guest? They want to prepare something for him to eat. Couldn't you stay with us? You know, couldn't you stay and have a bite to eat, some bread? And the angel said, well, he could. He agreed to be detained slightly for a short while. He was agreeable, but he gave an alternate suggestion that instead of giving him food to eat, he says, why don't you offer something to the Lord in respect to him for what good news that I brought you? Instead of giving me to eat, pay your respect and give your thanks to the Lord. So the husband thought, well, that would be good. So he prepares something. He takes a young animal or kid from the flock, and he begins to prepare an offering to the Lord on this rock to offer it to the Lord. Then what happens that in connection with the fire that's made to roast this animal and to burn it, to consume it, as an offering, the angel that's there, all of a sudden, he seems to glide into the flame, and he goes right up in the fire, in the smoke, as it were, and he disappears. In other words, he's a solid person. He looks solid, normal. The next thing he knows that as this fire is roaring, that he is in the fire, they see, and he changes, like his shape, and he goes up into the fire, disappears. Now they know this is really weird what we've seen. They know this is no ordinary man that we saw. We saw something that's out of this world. And so they recognized, and they were fearful, and they said they realized because of the character of the man that he was a man of God, a good man. But now when he did this, they said, surely we have seen God, as it were, as though God came down here and appeared as a man. And thus they recognized it as a minimum, at least as an angel of the Lord. Now, the thing is this, they first saw him as an ordinary person, but because of what he could do, this man, in disappearing from them, they realized it was a supernatural being. Now, in one case, we saw they're invisible and they're made visible by a miracle. This case, it looks like an ordinary man, but like an ordinary man, says the angel did wondrously when they made that offering in disappearing up in the flame. All right, now we do take another one. Some of the characteristics Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 31, and chapter 20, verse 6. Now, Sister Carol, if you could read both of those citations, Leviticus 19, chapter 31st verse.
Regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. And the soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits and after wizards to go a-whoring after them, I will even set my face against that soul and will cut him off from among his people.
All right. Now, while technically speaking, both good and bad angels can do all of these things, the Lord is saying by this instruction here, he says that don't tamper with anybody, person that you know who deals with spirits. Anybody who claims to be a wizard or a witch or do black magic or has familiar spirits or deals with... Now, the thing is this, that while good angels can do these things, they don't play around with mankind. They only do certain things when God instructs them to do on very rare occasions. But for us to try to communicate and expect these visual representations would be wrong. It's the unholy, the unclean angels, the fallen angels that seek to entice man to deal with them, to fraternize with them, to be friends with them by doing certain things. At first, it seems to be to your interest. First, they seem to be thinking of you, but actually they're not. They have other things in mind, and what happens later on, those that deal with them find out they end up wrecked in many different ways, and they were deceived by what's called lying spirits. Now, here it says they're familiar spirits. Seek not familiar spirits. Now, the reason it uses the word familiar, there's a few reasons. One is a person dies. That person could be a boy, it could be a man, it could be a woman. They die. Then it said, well, they're still alive. They die, but they're still alive. That's the report given by somebody, say, like Houdini. I'm trying to think of a reason I can't offhand in this generation. But they say that if you go to such and such a house, you can speak with your father who's dead, or your wife who died, or your son or daughter. Well, we know that for the living to seek to the dead, the Bible says that's not true because the dead die. When they go into the tomb, they go into a sleep. They die until the resurrection, at that time in the resurrection, which is the future date, when the Lord Jesus calls men out of the grave, then they'll come out. All that are in their grave shall come out, but not until then. And so they're likened as sleeping in the grave. But the fallen angels want to give a different impression than that which God gives. And so they make believe that when people die, they don't die. They go to another place. They go to hell, or they go here, or they go there. And they say they're still alive. They're more alive than they were when they died. And that, do you want to talk with them? Or you come over to such and such a house, and they sit around the table, and they put the lights down low and low, and then they hold hands around the table, and the next thing you know, there's an apparition of that person who died. That may be seen in a misty sort of light, and the person talks to them and sounds like the very person who died. Same type of voice, the appearance looks the same, but what it is, it's a fallen angel assuming the likeness of some person familiar to those who are trying to communicate with them. And so it's this masquerading, it's this duplication of people that are either famous. There are a lot of famous people that are supposed to be alive, but they're not, like Elvis Presley. That's something new. They're hoping that he'll show up. Well, I wouldn't be surprised that some of the fallen angels, under certain circumstances, in certain conditions and places, certain things can happen where an apparition or a likeness could appear that would, with voice or song even, simulate it to such an extent that it would deceive those who are hearing it. And so that's why they're called familiar spirits, in that they use their miraculous powers to imitate the person. Well, you sometimes see a person, a man, imitate different personalities. One man can imitate maybe 7, 8, 9 different people, and they imitate it so well, it sounds like them. They even make the actions and all of the person that they're making fun of or trying to mimic. So it's no wonder that the angels can do even more than that, because they can make themselves look like the person, not just the action, not just the voice, but they can actually appear as the person. So that unless we had this information in the Bible, we would be greatly deceived. We would not know. So what this teaches us is that because a person is supernatural, because a person, another being, is far superior to us does not mean we can trust them. They are not to be trusted any more than you can trust one another of us. Here, they are like humans here. They're just as mankind is fallen. Fallen when they're born, that everybody has something wrong with them, and it's only in Jesus that God recognizes us and hears our prayers, and so forth. So it's only under his arrangement that we can find and have favor with God, the arrangement that he's established. Now, with regard to these other beings, what I'm trying to do is point out certain things. That a person is supernatural, I think they're good. The very fact that a person has more wisdom in science, or they can disappear, appear and disappear, you think, well, they're supernatural. Well, they are. They are supernatural. They are. They have kids. But that does not have anything to do with their character. They can be bad as well as good. But in this case, we're not to trust by sight. We cannot trust them by sight. And that's why the Lord puts these regulations in his word, that when you are invited to go to such and such a party, a seance, or the Ouija board, to play with the Ouija board, to talk to spirits, these are dangerous instruments. They do communicate to them. There are a lot of stories I could tell, but what I'm trying to do is, the Bible is telling you, watch out, don't tamper, don't associate with these people that like to communicate with other people. Now, sisters just called attention to something with regard to the witch of Endor. King Saul wanted to consult Samuel. Samuel was already dead at that time. And he appeared, spirit came up out of the grave, as it were, and talked with Saul. And the Lord made a law that you should not consult with these witches or mediums or wizards. And he did that, and the next thing, Saul was in battle slain. And not only was he slain, but his whole family died as a result of that disobedience. Now, this is nothing. They seek sometimes to imitate personalities. So accurately do they do them that they would deceive everybody, except they had understanding here of the word. Now the next thing. Let's read Judges again, the 6th chapter, verse 19 through 21. In other words, read 3 verses, the 19th, 20th, and 21st verses. Karen, if you would read this, if you have it.
6:19?
Yes. Tells about Gideon, and Gideon went in. 19, 20, and 21.
Then Gideon went in and made ready a kid in
unleavened.
Unleavened cakes of an
ephah. That's a hard word.
Wow. And the flesh he put in a basket and put the broth in a pot and brought it out unto him under the oak and presented. And the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so.
One more.
And the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock and consume the flesh and unleavened cake. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of the
city. All right, now, here you have another account somewhat similar to the one with Manoah when he was in the field and offered the kid of the goat, and the angel went up in the fire. Now, here's a case where Gideon is talking with this angel, and he wants to show his appreciation. And instead of cooking the meal in the normal sense, like in the oven or whatever it might be, or on the rock, the angel says, now you just put the food here on the rock. You put the unleavened cakes. You rest them on that rock. And then you pour out the broth. Well, when you pour the broth out, it would be all liquid. All liquid. And here's this uncooked cake, as it were, ready for burning, ready to be cooked, prepared. And now, instead of there being a normal fire, instead of, like Manoah, made the fire. Manoah made the fire and put the offering on, and the angel went up in the fire and spoke. In this case, the angel said, just put the raw food there. Just put the prepared thing there and the broth, and that was poured out, and here it's a mess, as it were, on the thing. And then he takes a wand, a staff, and touches the rock. And when he touches the rock, the whole thing just burns right up instantly, just like in smoke. He accepted that. The angel, through a miraculous power, consumed that like you would under a slower method with fire. Instead of it going slowly being consumed, it's instantaneous. So you hear of account something touching and what great things can be done by touching with a rod. Remember Moses, when he lifted his rod over the Red Sea parted. So there are accounts of these great powers, but these are in the past. These are in Old Testament times, when there was a way of discerning between the good and evil angels. But we're living now, thousands of years later than these accounts recorded now. And there is more instruction of the Lord, because now God is looking for those who will look for instruction just from this word, not from prophets, not from people who walk around and are infallible. He wants us to appreciate this, and this is called the Bible, the Word of God. This is the only safe guide of understanding. Now, if anybody helps you to understand the Bible, well and good, to the extent that they help you. But you have to be careful even that, even with regard to me or anybody else. You have to use discretion, and it has to be in harmony with the instruction of this word, not by what other people teach or other books say. This is the authority. Now, we're living at this time where we have to take special precautions. All right, back there, here's another thing they did, showing that these invisible angels can do marvelous things. They can change their body and change the shape and disappear. And it says this angel disappeared too in Gideon, because after he touched it with the wand, it said, and he disappeared out of their sight. He vanished. So it shows that they have very unusual powers. Now, another one. Let us take 1 Chronicles, 21st chapter. Sister Esther, if you read verses 14 through 16 and 27 through 30.
So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel, and there fell 70,000 men of Israel. And God sent the angel to Jerusalem to destroy it. But when he was about to destroy it, the Lord saw it, and he repented of the evil. And he said to the destroying angel, it is enough. Now stay your hand. And the angel of the Lord was standing by the threshing floor of Ornan, the Jebusite. And David lifted his eyes and saw the angel of the Lord standing between earth and heaven, and in his hand a drawn sword stretched out over Jerusalem. Then David and the elders, clothed in sackcloth, fell upon their faces. Then the Lord commanded the angel, and he put his sword back into the sheath. At that time, when David saw that the Lord had answered him at the threshing floor of Ornan, the Jebusite, he made his sacrifices there for the tabernacle of the Lord, which Moses had made in the wilderness, and the altar of burnt offerings were at that time in the high place at Gibeon. But David could not go before it to inquire of God, for he was afraid of the sword of the angel of the Lord.
Now, there was a time where the nation of Israel, in Old Testament time, they disobeyed the Lord. And so did King David, in connection with a certain experience. And what happened? The Lord, as a punishment, visited a pestilence. It tells us when we started to read this account that he sent a pestilence, and 70,000 people died. And David saw this angel visible in the sky. He says David lifted up his eyes and saw between the heaven and the earth an angel standing with a sword in his hand. Well, the heaven he's talking here is like way, way up, way, way up, and the earth down here. That in the atmosphere, in between the two extremes, in this atmosphere, he saw this angel. Now, David at this time would probably have been in what's called Mount Ophel, where he resided in the old city, and this would be, to use an equivalent today, supposing the town hall of the town is a mile and a half away from your house, and you're in the backyard, and you look up into the sky and see a mile and a half away over the town, not only over the hall, but over the whole town, an angel standing with a sword. Well, the very first thing, that angel couldn't be the size of an ordinary man, because you wouldn't even see him. He'd be too small. You couldn't even see the man. So for someone to see in the distance, far in the distance, this angel standing between heaven and earth with a sword, meant that this angel was monstrous in size, a tremendous angel, and holding a sword that covered the city. For instance, in New York City, if you saw even the biggest man you know on earth today with a sword, you wouldn't know what he meant when he'd have his sword out. You wouldn't see him in the first place. Second place, if you could see him, you wouldn't know what he meant by the sword. But what's he holding the sword over? Over his foot? Over the building? you wouldn't know what it is. You wouldn't get the thought that it's over the entire city. But if you saw a great big angel in the atmosphere, standing in the sky with a tremendous sword over the whole city, well, then you know that he's standing with the sword over the city. Now, what this means is that the angels can change their shape and make it very, very large, extremely large. Or they can distort it. They can change the shape into a flame and disappear in the fire. See, in other words, what I'm trying to say is that they are different than us. You can't change your shape. The most thing you can do is make a muscle. Or you can put your chest out. That's about as much as you can do because we're physical beings. We're very limited. We have very little elasticity. But they have tremendous powers. Now, we've seen when they appeared as an ordinary person and disappear as an ordinary person, there's no difference. Here's a case where there's a tremendous one. Now the angel said, well, there's been enough punishment. 70,000 people dying, that's enough. That should serve the lesson. And he stays the angel's hand. And this angel then takes this tremendous sword and puts it in his sheath, meaning that he's like satisfied. He's done the punishment that he had been set and that the Lord is satisfied that they should have learned the lesson. Now the thing is, it says that David was afraid to go to the tabernacle place of worship. Because what had happened, there's a big change, and we can't go into this history part much, because this is a whole story in itself. But he was afraid to go and offer on the official offering in Israel because of the tremendous power of the angel of the Lord in connection with that altar, which was at Gibeon, a place called Gibeon, towards northern Israel. Now we take another case where it's exactly the opposite. We take one, Mark 5, the fifth chapter of Mark, and Bruce, if you could look that up, that's one of the Gospels. Now, what you do, Bruce, you read, say, five verses of that chapter, the fifth chapter, 1 through 5, and then your mother will conclude through 13.
And they came over unto the other side of the sea, into the country of...
The Gadarenes, is it?
Yes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him...
This is Jesus now, come out of the ship.
Out of the tomb. A man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among serpents, and no man could bind him. No, not with chains, because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been torn asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones.
But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice and said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there nigh unto the mountains a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirits went out, and entered into the swine. And the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. They were about 2,000 and were choked in the sea.
Now here's a case where Jesus is in the boat and he's on the Sea of Galilee and he goes across the sea. As he lands and he's getting out of the boat, and a man comes running towards him. And this man is looking for help. He's having a tremendous experience, which we can't go into. He cut himself, beat himself, and did all kinds of things. Well, anyway, what happened? He looks for help, for aid. The account tells us that this man had an unclean spirit. And then when the unclean spirit speaks to him, it addresses him as though it's only one person. But actually, what this unclean spirit was, there were several persons inside him, of which one of them was the spokesman, the gang leader, like the leader of these that are in. And in order for the people with Jesus to know what's going on, he could have cured the man and had everything done, and they would not be aware of certain things which he desired them to be aware of. So he asked Lee, what's your name? Jesus knew then his name probably to start with anyway. But that's for our benefit. And for those who were back there, when this event has happened. Now, what happens? He tells the unclean spirit to come out. Now, the man says he doesn't want to just come out and go nowhere. Well, he wants permission to go into something else. He's in this man, inside him now. This is another thing. A fallen angel can be standing beside you, above you, or far away. He can be even in your body, even in you. This is how strange this spirit world is. Now, I'm not trying to, to frighten you. It's just to make you aware of certain things, powers that exist, and what to do about them. We will try to conclude a little later. Now, the next thing, Jesus says, "What's your name?" And he says, "My name is Legion." And he says, "For we are many." So it's not one person. He says, "For we are many." But he's the spokesman, the one that's inside, that's invisible. And the word Legion, most people don't know what that means. They think, well, Legion means a few, quite a number. Maybe 10, 20, 25, 50. It's like a vague term. But this is at the time of the Roman legions that the gospel is being written. And a Roman legion, it depends on what period of history, consisted of 3,000 to 6,000 people in a legion. 3,000 to 6,000 people in one body, a company. It's like a little army. And inside this man was all these demons. Now, we don't know exactly the number, but when they said, "Our name is Legion," it means thousands. There were thousands inside this. Now, that's like you say, "Oh, that's impossible." That's the way we might reason. But let us consider. Actually, there are things that are very understandable, but we don't think about them normally. And it's hard until you get older. Now, of course, as young people, there are certain things that takes time to learn from the standpoint of science. But when a mother has a child, she carries that child for 9 months before it's born. It's a fixed period of time that when a woman is carrying a child, that at the end of 9 months, she bears a child. Now, while the child is in the womb of the mother, it grows and grows, and the stomach grows. It's a little, first it's white, you can't see anything, and then it grows, grows, bigger, bigger, and then a child is born. Now the child comes out, and he's, say, 8 pounds or 10 pounds. Here's a little baby, see? And here's the little baby, and you watch him, and he's crying and everything, and then he becomes a day old, a week old, a month old, and he starts to grow. That little baby starts to grow and grow and grow and grow until he gets to the fixed stature of a young woman or a young man. And he comes to a fixed height. He may be 5 feet 10, he may be 6 feet 4, whatever it is, he comes to that thing. Now, that may take, say, 19 years of age or 20. That's a round number, about the age at which, when you get to be that age, you're full grown from a normal standpoint of height. Now, the point is this. We don't look on this as a miracle, but that's just the way it is, and we're so familiar with it. Now, here, it grows from a little baby up to a man or a woman in X amount of time. Now, in the womb, it grew from when a woman carries a child and conception takes place. You could not even see that baby. It's so small, and that's called a gene. It starts with a gene. That's what's involved. It's so small that if you were to put it on a scale or a plate, you couldn't see it. You need a microscope. You'd need a microscope to see that. And it grows to the size of a baby and later to an adult. But because it takes 9 months and then 19 years, you don't think of it that much. You're so familiar. But suppose you sped that up and did that in 19 seconds instead of 19 years. Suppose that was speeded up. Well, then you say, oh, that's the start. You'd be bowled over because it's so miraculous. It just happened like that. But actually, what it is that this is a miracle. We are miracles as human beings in our development. But because it's so commonplace, we overlook some of these things. Now, the thing is this, that angels can do this process with any speed of time. They can do it as fast as they want. Instantaneous. And so then we'll say, well, that's miraculous. Well, it is miraculous. And so is our development is miraculous. But one thing is this. We have a fixed period of development. We have to wait so much period of time. In other words, we're like pre-programmed. We're pre-programmed to develop arms, legs, hair, eyes, so forth, the brain, at a certain period of time, X amount of time, and then the birth, and then the childhood, and then the young adolescence, and then the teenager, and then a young person. There's a definite time period that you look for. And we can't do anything about it. We can't manipulate that. We cannot control that. The difference with spirit beings is that they can control that. And they can speed that up. Now the thing is this. If one individual can be a tiny little baby, or even less than a baby, well, how many can you fit in a human body? Well, theoretically, there's an unlimited amount that they could fit in a person's body, as far as the organism. And so, what happened? To make it more simple, there was another account of Mary Magdalene, which you may have known in the scripture, who was a woman who led a wrong kind of life. But she was converted to Christ and asked for forgiveness. Christ forgave her, and she became a very unusual woman, Mary Magdalene. But it's said that before she accepted Christ, she had seven devils in her, seven different persons that were controlled. Now we can understand this man who comes running to the boat, and he's running to the boat, Lord, help me, because he was going crazy with all this activity of all these different thoughts. Because you have all these personalities in you, you have all kinds of different thinking, all jumbled. One is thinking this way, one thing, the person is berserk. And that's why we say when a person's mad or crazy, they're berserk. Well, they really are. They really are berserk. And in many cases, they are possessed with demons in many cases. And so this man, he had so much in him that when he had chains on him, chaining his body, and the people were afraid that he'd hurt somebody, they put the big chains around him, and he could just break them apart because of this terrific power exploding in his body. You now can see why the man was so deranged. He could not bear anything on his body. He just wanted to rid himself of everything. And so he couldn't keep clothing or chains or anything on. He just had to get it off. But that did not free him because they were inside. He could not get them out. He could rip the chains off, but he couldn't get them out. And he needed help. And that's why Jesus says, "You come thou out." And they went into the swine, and the fact that 2,000 swine ran down the slope and ran into the sea and were drowned, these angels, when they were cast out by Jesus, were mad. They were mad at Jesus, but they couldn't do anything to him. So what they tried to do is, if we can get this herd of swine, these neighbors, and have all their flock destroyed, this whole herd of swine destroyed, if we can destroy them, they'll want to get rid of Jesus. They'll want to get Jesus out of this territory. The thing is, that probably the territory where these men were, there were two, but this is only talking about the one in Mark 5th chapter. That place where they were probably had a lot of demons there, and they didn't want Jesus around the area. They wanted him to get out. And so what happened when these people lost their livelihood with a swine going into the sea, they said to Jesus, get out, we don't want to hear you, we don't want your message. And it had that effect in that they wouldn't listen to Jesus speak to them the truth. But what happened when Jesus, one individual, when he just commanded them to get out, you can see the power that Jesus has. Nobody can contend with him, no matter who it is. He has the power in him. And so while Jesus is very gentle, very loving, very tender, he has tremendous power, so that any other evil powers that would try to do any injury to us, that can be stopped. He can easily stop that. Because if he did not, do you know that those who follow the Lord, they wouldn't live very long, I tell you that. They'd be destroyed. Because the fallen angels, they don't want to have anything to do with those who are interested in God's word. They want people to follow them, not this. So our lives are preserved miraculously, but we can't see it because this is invisible. And so the Apostle Paul says in the New Testament that the powers that we fight against that are unseen, that these are unseen powers and that they're great, much more than we are, except that the Lord would help us and protect us, we would not be able to fight the good fight of faith. All right, now, the next thing. So now we have where they can be just a pinpoint inside. They can change their shape monstrously large, or look like an ordinary person, or be nothing practically. Another thing they can do, they can go through the door. John 20th chapter, verse 19. Sister Carol, if you agree that...
John 20:19?
Yeah.
Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, came Jesus and stood in the midst, and said, saith unto them, peace be unto you.
All right. Now, this is in the New Testament, and when Jesus was crucified, the disciples, they didn't know what had happened. They were frightened. Now, supposing this is the room, right here, and the disciples, it says, for fear of the people, they locked the doors. They locked them, and they bolted the doors. That's what it means. The doors were shut. That is, they were secured and locked. And so there's no way coming in. And the next thing, while they're there, and in fear, with the locked door, the next thing in their very midst, here's Jesus. But now this is Jesus, who was now different than he was before. Before he was a man. But when he died on the cross and was buried, he was raised a spirit being. This event, when they closed the doors, was after Jesus' death and his resurrection. So that when he was resurrected, he wanted to talk with them. Now he's different. He's not a man anymore. He's a spirit being again. So he just comes right through the door without opening it. Well, no human can do that. Only spirit beings can pass through. And the fact is, science tells us that every single object that we have here on this earth is permeated with holes. If you look under a microscope, it doesn't matter what the substance is or how hard it is. If you have a powerful enough microscope, you could see it that in space, there's a lot of activity, a lot of atoms, molecules, or neutrons, or whatever the powers might be. And the more they look to find, the smaller and smaller the object is, that even that is just filled with space. But if you try to go through that door and you hit it, it's solid. You say, well, there's no holes in that door. But actually, that door is a sieve. That door is, if you had it under a microscope, it's actually a sieve. So it means that spirit beings can not only change their body configurations, but they can change the molecules in their body so that they go through that sieve. So no matter what the object is, they can change their molecular composition and so that it fits through a sieve. If you had several holes in a board and you put plugs through them, they go right through. If you have them rightly aligned and all, they'll go right through. And so that's how they can go through a door. So physical objects to a spirit being don't mean a thing. And it is known even today. I will not take another part. I have Hebrews 2:7. Karen, if you...
Thou madest him a little lower than the angel. Thou crownest him with glory and honor, and didst set him over the work of thy hand.
All right. Now, this is a quotation from the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, this that's quoted in the New by the Apostle Paul, in going back to the 8th Psalm, I believe it is, that 8th Psalm speaks about man, that man one day is going to be at peace here on the earth and live here, the whole human family, in peace. But that day is yet future. That day is future. And it tells us that man, a human person, is small, is tiny. It says, thou madest him a little lower than the angels. But actually, the thought in this verse is that thou hast made him, man, little. And if God made the planet Earth, this great planet, and he made it and held it in his hand, as it were, he must be much bigger than this Earth, right? And what are we? We're in a little room here in a little tiny town, in a little county, a little state, in the United States, one of the states, and we're a little piece of this globe, a little tiny thing, a little tiny insect on this globe. Well, man is like a little insect in size, very little tiny thing, and God in heaven is a tremendous being, very glorious and large. And we think that, oh, anything large like that is strange, you know. But it's we that are strange. We are microscopically small on this little tiny planet in this tremendous universe. In a tremendous universe, we're just like nothing. And so it's speaking here that man, even though he's made small like that, that God loves him and has crowned man with honor and glory. So that here, a little tiny person speck, like here I am sitting at the head of this table, talking to you like this, he's given us a mind to know his word. And the angels in heaven, with all their great capabilities, are probably standing in awe that this little tiny man, by faith and reading God's word, can know so much with
such a great limitation. We cannot see God, we cannot see the heavens or spirit beings, but through his word, we can learn a great deal, a tremendous amount. And this is in part what Jesus said when he says that out of the mouth of babes, he has ordained wisdom. Now, he said that on an occasion where there were the children saying, Hosanna to the Son of David, but I think that what brought that out is that, in principle, he drew the analogy that it's amazing to these spirit beings how that we, these little tiny creatures down here that we are, that he's given us a mind, a brain, to think, to reason, to pray to the almighty great God. So imagine this great God having these little teeny things pray to him. How precious they are in his sight. So scientists, they say, who are you? You little tiny thing. How do you know there is even a God or that he's even listening to you? But when we exercise faith towards him, this great being, God is pleased. And he likes the exercise of faith in seeing him that is invisible. And so here we find that this crowning with glory and honor, while in the fullest sense will be in the future as regards mankind when he's made perfect and is Lord over the animal creation, that's the ultimate objective as far as human beings down here is concerned. And yet even now there is a measure of that glory, even though mankind has fallen from his former stature. Now the next thing. We spoke before that these superior powers now that try to communicate with man, these are fallen angels. God has permitted them to have certain liberties without killing them. He purposely is allowing them a little time to see what they're going to do. He knows what they're going to do, of course. Because in permitting these great beings certain liberties, in permitting them to do these things, it will bring very valuable lessons to everybody. It'll bring valuable lessons to other spirit beings. It'll be valuable lessons to us in the future. Now we can't understand all those things, particularly if one doesn't know, say, too much of the Lord's word at present. It's very difficult to know. But he has permitted this as a test for those who want to serve God now when everything seems to be contrary. For instance, if you want to be a follower of Jesus, people would make fun of you. The goody-goody. They think you're a sissy or something like that, or you're a little touched in the head. And they like to go and do their thing in their way, and they think, well, we're getting a lot of happiness. And what are you doing? What are you doing with a mournful face and so forth? But the thing is this. God is going to reward those who now will believe in him and his word and give them a place in the next life far above all other people. And so these people who are laughing, sneering, and jeering, they will only get an opportunity of life down here, where the others who exercise faith in Christ now will be with Christ in glory and have a completely different realm. And if down here we can see certain things we like to do, we see certain things, pleasures that there are, that are good pleasures, say, well, you get some little tiny idea of what the spiritual pleasures, because they are the same things up there, only much grander than down here. We are limited in many things. But in God's own heaven, you can be sure that the trees and the grass and the landscape and the vehicles and the things and all the are much grander than anything down here. And it takes faith to believe that and to order your life or direct your life in that direction. And that's why he permits these things. Because if there was nothing wrong, if there was no evil, say, in the world, say there's no evil down here or in the atmosphere, how would you manifest to God that you love him under pressure, that you're willing to suffer persecution and to the loss of friends because you'd rather love God than them? How would you have that opportunity of even showing God? You wouldn't, because if everybody knew and loved God, you'd have no opportunity of testing. You couldn't be proven worthy of the special honor or station. And so the permission of evil is to afford those of mankind an opportunity. One of the reasons is that to follow Christ and to suffer with Christ for his name's sake. The future reward is so great, but in the present life he'll give joys that will more than compensate the other pleasures you might get down here. So it isn't all sadness, and it isn't all trial. There's a lot of good, a lot of sweetness, a lot of joy that one gets in following the Lord in the present life.
let alone the future. This opportunity of the age of faith is in dealing with these other evil forces. And the only thing we'd like to know is that while all these spirit beings have these powers, the advice given to Christians is, and those who want to be following and do the Lord's will, is to have nothing to do with these attempts to communicate with these other beings. And in the future, they're going to masquerade and make believe that they're coming from other planets as wise people to help us, where in reality, these other planets are not even inhabited yet. This is the first planet right here. We are right in the very dawn of creation. And these angels are going to imitate these other beings, that they come from other planets, or where in reality they're just fallen angels, disobedient angels, and the Lord is going to take care of them in due time. All right, now we've had quite a long study, and I tried to do it as fast as I could. It's a long, long study. But just to show that the existence of other beings and how the Bible indicates, gives us a little information and insight about it. Let us then just close with a word of prayer.